Ferns are such gorgeous plants. They're also one of the oldest plants out there. They're basically living dinosaurs and they are incredible. But there is that gif going around that's like the maidenhair fern will thrive in the crack on the sidewalk, but the minute you bring it inside, it turns brown and crumbles. And I want people to be more ferny. I want people to try the right ferns for their home more often. So we're bringing back a fabulous interview I did with my friend Lisa from Houseplant Guru. She's a lifelong plant expert who loves ferns and has successfully grown ferns in her, you know, Midwest home, which usually wouldn't be very conducive to fern growing for many, many years. This was a great interview that I've pulled way back from the archives because it's filled with so much good information from Lisa on how to keep your ferns healthy, how to get them to grow, how to avoid the crispy fronds that you're pulling off and finding all over your floor, and how to choose the right fern for your lifestyle and for your home conditions. And let me tell you, it's very rarely going to be the maidenhair fern unless you're growing that puppy under glass. I hope this helps and is informative. And without further ado, here is Lisa and our conversation on ferns.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Lucky number three. We had to take a minute offline and figure out what other episodes we've talked because I feel like you and I chat every couple weeks. So it's funny to remember what we've formally recorded together.
Right. After the violets. I couldn't remember that.
So for Bloom and Grow listeners, Lisa is joining us again for her third time on the show. The latest episode she did was an amazing review of African violets. And then also the low light, the very popular episode on best low light plants and how to deal with low light apartments and homes. So I'm so excited to have you back, Lisa, because I am thinking a lot about ferns right now, just personally, because my wedding bouquet is going to be all ferns.
Oh.
So I have a big fern inspiration board for my wedding. So I've been feeling more connected to ferns lately and also am a really intense fern killer, just composted. I had a Boston fern for 3 years and I had kind of brought it to the brink of death and resuscitated it, and actually was kind of like amazed at the resiliency of this fern because I feel like everybody thinks that ferns are so finicky, but this fern kept dying back, growing in, but I just composted it. So I hope that this conversation will get me inspired and get our community inspired to start caring for ferns again.
Good. I love ferns. I don't know. If you read my blog, maybe you've read about my great grandmother's fern that my mom received in 1957 at her bridal shower.
Right.
And then I got some in 1985 when I got married. And then I just gave a piece of it to my daughter in 2018 at her bridal shower. So we've had this fern. My mom's had it. I have her original now because she's not able to care for it. But I've had the same fern for mine for 35 years.
So beautiful.
Had hers for over 60. So it was great grandma's. We don't even know what kind it is. It's some sort of Boston fern, but it has the regular fronds on it, you know, that just have the leaflets. It looks like a regular fern. And then it has really, really more different on the same frond. It's really crazy.
That's amazing. That is like a classic heirloom plant story. Wow. And to have that additional wedding tie, that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Please shoot me that link and we'll put the link to that blog in the show notes so people can listen and see the pictures of it. So I know that you've loved ferns. We've talked about that before. So let's just dive right in here and talk about why people get so scared of ferns, and ferns have been labeled as being such finicky plants. So can you kind of dive into why they're such an issue for people?
Well, I'm going to be right up front and say I have killed my fair share of ferns, believe me. I think I'm on my fourth maidenhair in like a year. And I'm on crispy waves. I've killed those. So it's all a matter of, you cannot let them dry out, in my opinion. They have these really fibrous root systems that are kind of sensitive. And when you take them out of the pot, it's kind of weird to see if they're root bound because they're brown roots usually. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see, actually see them. They just like look like they're part of the potting medium, but you've got to keep them watered. And I would have to say, I don't really raise the humidity too much. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I say they need a lot of humidity because they come from places where some of them, the tropical ones, it's 70% humidity. So they would like raised humidity. So you could set them on pebble trays. I have so many plants grouped together that there's lots of humidity where they're at because I have so many plants. And I think that also, like, everybody's like, I can't believe you have a Boston fern. You've had it for so long. Mine drops the front, you know, the little leaflets drop all over the floor. Mm-hmm. So do mine, because that's what they naturally do. The oldest leaves of any plant are going to pass away. They're going to drop off. But for me, and sometimes a whole frond will die and it will just be leaflets everywhere on the floor. But it, because it's my grandmother's, it's worth it for me to clean it up. And it's mm-hmm. still a beautiful fern. And sometimes it does, like you said, it kind of wanes and it might not look so great today. You know, in a month from now, it will look absolutely fabulous. So they can be finicky, but I think it's really the watering practices that make it that way.
So maybe let's zoom out and talk about where ferns exist in the real world, in nature, and draw those parallels to how we can kind of recreate that indoors. So where do you find ferns?
Well, the crazy thing is you can find ferns all over the whole world. You walk, take a walk in the New England woods or even woods here, and I live in Michigan. There's ferns everywhere, ferns all over the forest floor. I think you can go to the tropics and there's ferns. And what's really crazy is when you're in the you know, like even in Florida or tropical places, you've got to look up in the trees because like bird's nest ferns and all those kind of footed ferns, they're epiphytes. So they're growing up in the crooks of trees and you may not know that that's what that is.
Wow, because I've always thought of them as ground cover. I've never really thought of them as being in trees, but bird's nests really live in the trees, like bird's nests?
Yes. Yep. Bird's nest ferns and also some of the staghorn fern. Of course, we all, you know, you've seen those mounted, those grow in trees. Some of those epiphytic, like the ones that creep and crawl, some of those mm-hmm. are epiphytic as well. So they're everywhere.
That's so interesting. So is there any common thread? I mean, I know that there's a wide variety of ferns that we can talk about today, but from what I've read, I recently like was asked about maidenhair ferns and they all live or thrive like near streams or bodies of water. And that makes sense to why their soil needs to be moist all the time and why like they will die if there's no water present. Is that kind of the case for all ferns?
I think so. And what I've discovered is the thinner the leaf, you know how thin maidenhair ferns are,
yeah,
their
so
leaves.
Cute.
The thin, and then you have maybe the bird's nest that's more leathery. They will take, you know, they'll dry out. They can take out like any plant, like compared to a succulent to any other plant. If the thicker the leaves, I wouldn't say less water, well, less water they need, or the more tolerant they are of drying out a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Right. So a maidenhair fern to me is, I'm keeping one alive right now. It's out in my sunroom and I have not let it dry out one time. I'm out there like making sure it's watered all the time. And it's pretty humid out there, especially right now because it's mm-hmm. the summer in Michigan right now. It's like a steam bath. So it's doing very well in the house. Not always the same, but you know, a lot of ferns do better if you could put them in a big terrarium as well.
Yeah.
You know,
terrariums, that's a great idea. So yeah, I think like with ferns, it's just important for us to understand they are loving humid environments that are close to water. And that is just like the polar opposite of our homes. So true. While a lot of other houseplants that grow in the tropical jungle also have that environment, but they are hardier. And these plants can just be a little trickier and they really do need that replication a little bit more than our pothos, you know, that's a little bit right. more drought tolerant or something like that.
Right. And they do have those really fibrous small roots. So once mm-hmm. you let them dry out, they're almost like all the roots that are like the feeder roots that are tiny. They're kind of like all the roots are like that. They don't have any like big fleshy roots that are sustaining them.
Well, that's an interesting point because one of our Patreon plant friends wanted to ask, is there something about ferns' root systems that make them more finicky?
Well, they're more like the feeder roots or the hair roots. You know, they're very tiny. I mean, not that you know, you say that, but then maybe some people think that those, I call them footed ferns, mm-hmm. the ferns that have those creeping rhizomes like rabbit's foot ferns. Mm-hmm. On top, they think those are maybe roots, but really those are stems that are, and really all, I think most ferns have underground rhizome. They grow from a rhizome, but their roots are more like feeder roots. They're really tiny. They're really thin. They're brown and they don't want to be dried out.
They're delicate, right?
Yes.
more delicate. So if that soil dries out, those roots are also, it's just going to be so easy to break them too. Whereas those, the more plump, pink, juicier roots that we think about when we look at our philodendron or our pothos or our monstera, that's not what we're dealing with. So those can kind of sustain a little bit more dry. They're just sensitive, you know, they're just a little more sensitive. And I feel like the thing with ferns, like any plant that gets labeled as like, oh, I'm going to kill that. On the other side of this is succulents. It's not necessarily about a plant is going to be predisposed to be easier to kill. Like people say a succulent or people say a fern. It's more about pairing that plant with the right personality.
And the right place, either in your home or wherever it needs to be.
Absolutely.
Like I always tell people, a succulent doesn't want to be in a low light situation and a fern doesn't want to be in a high light situation. You know, you have to have the right plant, right place.
Because something cool about ferns is that they are low light tolerant. So a lot of us who struggle with low light, ferns could be a great option for people that live in basements or live, you know, with very little light, but you need to kind of up your watering game or, you know, do some hacks. So now that we understand where ferns exist outdoors, what are your fern care tips for if we do want to venture out into the world of ferns? I'm trying to muster up my own courage after I composted that Boston fern that I told you about. So what are your fern care practices you would suggest?
I go by windows. I don't use light meters. So to me, east window is the perfect window for your ferns. Mm-hmm. I made sure I have good east windows because when I moved into this house, got to have east windows. They're all full of ferns because they like that morning light and they could take west. But if it's too close to the window, you know, that hot sun in the west in the afternoon is going to burn them. So you could put them back a little ways from a west window. I would not put them in a south window. I would not, unless it's back. I actually do have a rabbit's foot fern in a south window and it's about 5 feet from that south window. And believe me, that south window is already full of plants. So it's pretty shady and it's doing fine. It's a rabbit's foot fern. So just the right plant, right place. Also north would probably be okay. If, especially if it's got some reflecting light from a house next door or a building next door, I wouldn't say north with absolutely no light at all, nor shaded, has an awning or anything like that. So make sure it has the right light, a nice bright medium light, soft light. Don't let them dry out. Obviously, we already talked about.
So for new listeners who are in the Northern Hemisphere, Southern windows have the strongest light, Northern windows have the weakest light. So it goes strongest to south, second strongest is west because the sun sets in the west. So it gets burns a little hotter as it's setting. Third is east and fourth is north. So Lisa's saying the eastern is perfect. So if you want to put a fern on a windowsill, you can put it on an eastern. But if you're dealing with a stronger western or southern exposure, consider maybe putting that plant like a foot or two away from that windowsill. So like on whatever table is close to that window, giving it a little distance, right?
And then if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, that's the other way. Then your north window would be your most intense light.
What does burning look like? Is it just that like crispy edge?
Well, I've seen people like one of the bird's nest, you know, because the bird's nest fern has an actual leaf. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Not those little compound leaves that like a regular fern. And you'll see like brown spots in the middle or the part that's closest to the window or the sun is going to have burnt spots. Burnt edges could be just from not, you know, letting it dry out. Also, they are very sensitive to, like I said, we said they're sensitive. It can be damaged if you like over fertilized it or gave it a really, I wouldn't give a fern probably a full dose and probably most of my houseplants, a full dose of fertilizer like I would outside. So the tablespoon outside, I would use half of that inside or whatever it says, teaspoon. I'd use half of it or even a third or a quarter of it for my ferns.
So are you giving ferns half of what you give your other houseplants or you're giving them half of what you give your outdoor houseplants?
Yeah, well, my outdoor plants.
Outdoor plants.
Anything that, you know, because a lot of fertilizers are just multi-purpose fertilizers. Mm-hmm. And I would never use a full strength in the house.
Of course.
Unless, you know, you just don't need to. And with a fern, I might use like a quarter strength.
Okay.
Just to make sure I'm not burning those roots or.
Yeah, that was another question. Is there some sort of fertilizer mix ratio that ferns prefer? We have a listener question. Is there a generic mix to go for? Is it specific to types of ferns?
No, I've always just used a 20-20-20.
Okay.
Because we own a garden center. So we used to be Jack's Classic. Now it's called Peter's Professional. It's comparable to like Miracle-Gro because as a small garden center, we don't carry Miracle-Gro. You know, we carry the independent. So I don't think you have to buy anything that's specific to ferns. I think they probably ask that because, you know, when you go to the store, there's cacti and succulent fertilizer and it has a lower nitrogen. And then I've never looked, I guess. I've never seen anything just for ferns. I just use a 20-20-20 straight across the board.
And then you weaken it for all of your houseplants.
Yes.
I use Espoma Organics liquid indoor fertilizer. So it's designed to be weaker than the outdoor fertilizer and it's liquid. It's so easy. And I use that on all my houseplants. So I put that when my fern was thriving, that's what I
I should try that. I haven't tried that, but I should do that.
They make it so easy.
Because I love Espoma products. We carry all those as well.
That's awesome. Shout out to Espoma.
You know, all the tones. They have like rose tone, flower tone, all those. We carry all those.
They've got it all.
Swear by them.
Okay. So with ferns, so let's talk about watering. So the soil must remain damp.
Yes. I would not let them dry out.
What are your watering hacks? I mean, this is interesting because it's reminding me of our African violet conversation where you were suggesting those self-watering pots. I tried this self-watering crystal. It was like a glass thing that was in the shape of a crystal that you filled with water and then you put a cork in and then you put the cork side on the soil. So apparently the water was supposed to move through the cork onto the soil. Oh. I don't know if it didn't work or... So I was using it when my fern died. I don't know if I really was neglecting that fern pretty bad. So I don't know if it was that the water ran out and then the fern dried out or if it was that the water just didn't work. But what are your watering hacks for your ferns?
Just water them by hand. But I have seen where people use the self-watering pots and I'm thinking maybe I should, because those are usually, I've only seen them used for violets, but I don't know why that probably would work well for ferns so that it would never dry out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that would probably be a very good way to do it. Yeah. But I don't know if I'd use the wick. What you're talking about is kind of like those, you know, the balls that have the glass
like
balls.
Like a watering
orb. Self-watering. Yeah. I don't know about that. Maybe that would work too. But I definitely think the wick watering would work great because you'd never let it dry out as long as you keep the water filled, the water reservoir filled. That's the key.
Those wick watering things are interesting. And I feel like for me, I struggle there because I like to check in on my plants. Like I would rather just water the fern every day because I like to check in on my plants. Even if I don't check in on them every day, I'm for the most part. So I like to generally water. The issue with these self-watering pots I personally am running into is I fill the pot up and then I forget about it because it's self-watering. And then I don't check it. And the water's been dried out for like 2 weeks and the plant is dead. Oh. Because like the self-watering pot is made to be low maintenance, but because all my pots aren't on that schedule, like I forget about the one self-watering pot. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I would too. I forget about a lot of things. Yeah. As long as you keep it filled.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. But I just, you know, I make sure that I don't leave them standing in water or anything, but like my Boston, those big Boston ferns that I have that were my, you know, my mom's and mine, they're huge and they take a lot of water. And what's good is that plants like that, I don't know if you've ever noticed with ferns, you can kind of look at them and see if they're dry. Mm-hmm. Like I can glance into ones in one of the bedrooms upstairs and I walk by it when I go down the stairs and I look over and if that fern is translucent, it's a mint green, you know, it turns a lighter green. I'm like, oh no, it's really dry. And
it's the leaf colors change. Okay. So as the plant starts to pale, that's a sign, hey, you better water me.
Definitely with ferns for sure. I can tell. I mean, I walk by, I'm like, oh no. And it takes, I could probably give that a good, almost a gallon of water. That's how much water it drinks.
So it sounds like, do you think you can overwater a fern?
Yes, because there's not a plant that's being grown in potting medium or soil that wants to stand in water because then the roots are getting no oxygen. Because it's so full of water. So yes, you can definitely overwater or kill a fern with water. You can't just leave them sitting in water.
If you let it like sitting in like a pot of water because you need that oxygen. But at the same time, if you're watering responsibly, you can probably give a fern. If you want to be a mindful plant parent and you want to have a plant that you water or like nurture every day, you could give a fern like a little bit of water every day, every other day. Now that brings up, what do you think about misting?
I know a lot of people talk about misting, but misting does not, I think it's been proven you'd have to mist something every 15 minutes, 24 hours a day to make it worth your while. And I think it leaves too much. Once it dries up, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So I think the humidity trays or a humidifier is completely constantly giving out moisture. But also if you leave water sitting on the leaves too long, maybe you are going to mist it a lot. It could set it up to start growing some kind of disease, gray mold or botrytis or which is kind of the same thing, fungal spots. I don't need mist at anything. I never have.
Yeah. I like misting just like for fun.
I do tell people that. Right. Yeah. And it makes you feel good. And
yeah,
it's nothing wrong with as long as it dries out.
But
as long as it's not sitting on the leaves a lot.
Yeah. And I think more effective for increasing humidity, like grouping some ferns together, grouping your plants together to create a little microclimate or using a humidifier is probably the better way to like, if you're trying to mist to increase humidity, I think those are better suggestions. I personally like don't really get the pebble. Did you say that you do the water with the pebble rock tray?
On some plants, I do. And I don't just set it on the pebbles. Let's say you have a plant in a 4-inch pot with a saucer that's proportionate. So a 4-inch plant saucer. Then I would use like a 6, 8, or 10-inch bigger saucer that's filled with pebbles, filled with water up to the top of pebbles. And I set that saucer on top of the pebbles, not just set the plant so that there would be a chance of it actually standing in water. Does that make sense? So
yes.
It's two saucers.
So this hack for people who haven't heard of it is there's one of these common like garden things that people have been talking about, even in the plant care books from the 70s that I used to read, is you put your potted plant on a layer in the base tray. You put a layer of pebbles and you cover those pebbles up to the brim with water. And the thought is that water is going to slowly evaporate and create a little microclimate of higher humidity around your plant. And I feel like people have different opinions about it. And what Lisa is saying is instead of doing that, you're actually putting another saucer on top of that pebble tray and then the pot on top of that to prevent potential root rot with having that pot stand in water. That's really smart.
Yes. And then also give them a shower. If you can, you know, I have a lot of plants, so I don't move them all to the shower, but all my bedroom plants get put in the shower just to get the dust off. I have cat. You saw my cat hair off it, and it just really refreshes them. So especially ferns, you know, if you want to put them in, give them a nice shower once in a while, put them in your sink with a sink sprayer. They're going to love that.
I'm such a fan of a plant shower, especially too, just for getting the dust and cleaning the leaves. It's especially a plant that has a lot of leaves. It's just the easier thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to go
wipe those leaves down. Yeah.
If you have a fiddly fig, you may not take you long to wipe all those big leaves, but if you had a fern, that would take you hours.
Exactly. That's where I'm really sold on the process.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised to know that ferns can also get, like I've been fighting mealybugs on mine and they're sensitive. So you really can't spray them too much. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wouldn't go out and buy some huge insecticide and spray my, well, I don't with any of my plants, but you'd have to use a systemic because they're kind of prone to getting scale too. Brown scale.
Are they really? I didn't know that.
Once they get it, I've had a hart's tongue fern have that. Bird's nests have had that. I've actually had some on my rabbit's foot fern on the stems. So that can be a problem. Scale, mealybugs, which are hard to get rid of.
How do you like to treat those?
Try to get them off first. I'm always a big fan of like, you know, even on the stem, especially if it's a like a rabbit's foot fern, they have that long brown stem. You can kind of get them off there. Use a Q-tip with alcohol, which you have to be careful. But I think a systemic work well. And, you know, I've never done this because I'm afraid, especially with grandma's plant, like something happens to it. But I do have more. I have the original now. I have mine. So I have a few of them and I've started a few. So I could, but a lot of those ferns, you can just cut them off at the ground. I would do this in the spring, not in the fall, and they'll come back up. Kind of amazing. Yeah. So if you really have a bad case and it's a plant like grandma's, you don't want to get rid of. I'm not giving this up. It's not going to the compost pile. I can't. So then I would probably use a systemic, which I know in other countries, like I know Canada, there's no such thing as systemics. They do not sell them.
What is a systemic when you're...
A systemic is a chemical that you put, and I use Bonide systemic houseplant control. This one's a granular product and you sprinkle it on the soil. It tells you how much to use. Like, you know, if it's this size pot, use this many, this much, a teaspoon, or if this size pot, use a tablespoon or whatever. And you spread it around. Kind of, I have an old fork that I only use for that. And you scratch it in and then I water it in. And that chemical goes down into the root system, comes back up through the plant. And when the bugs eat it, they die.
Oh,
systemic. It goes through the whole system of the plant.
Okay.
And there are spray systemics, which is weird. Ferns are very, like you said, they're sensitive. And if you have to test a product on a leaf, because like the other day, I just did a post. You know how when you get plants, especially like I had a bird's nest and it has those little water spots on it, those white spots, and you try to wipe them off with just water and they don't come off. It's so unsightly. I hate it. And it's usually from fertilizer, like from the greenhouse fertilizer residue, like the salt residue, or just hard water minerals that get on that stay on the plant. So you use a lemon juice or just a lemon slice and wipe it off. And I was a little concerned about using it on a fern because I never had, but I did it. And I always rinse it off afterwards. I don't just leave the lemon juice on there. And it really did work and it did not hurt the plant at all.
Your post about that, I thought that was such a fun, like old school gardening hack. So
and it was.
Try the lemon.
I will tell you, that was from Elvin McDonald, who, if you've looked at old houseplant books, Elvin has written, I don't know, 40, 50 of them. So
he knows what he's talking about.
Yes. And he edited my first book. So he was like, use a lemon. Because I said, don't use anything on your plants, just water and a sponge. Don't use that plant shine or any of that goop. You don't need it. And he's like, oh, you can use a lemon. I'm like, really? So it works.
That's awesome.
And it did help the plants.
We'll put the link to that blog in the show notes as well so people can check it out. So, okay, Lisa, let's talk about spores. I just don't get them. They're these creepy little dots. So ferns just kind of regenerate or I guess propagate differently. So please tell me, what is a spore?
Okay, so first of all, the biggest question I get from ferns is I have little brown dots on it. My gosh, it's an insect. Right. What am I going to do? So this is what I tell people. If it's on the stem of the frond or the leaf, called a blade, the entire thing is called a blade. If it's on the stem, it is scale. Because scale, it does get, you know, ferns are very prone to getting scale. If it's on the front of the leaf, it is scale. The top of the leaf, it is scale. If you turn it over and it's covered with brown, they're usually in a pattern, then it's their spores. And it can be in lines too. Some plants, right, like bird's nests, are in lines like a chevron, you know, mm-hmm, like a zigzag. And then there's some like the rake ferns, the terrace ferns, they kind of like outline the back of the leaf.
It's kind of beautiful.
It is beautiful. And then there's some that are just polka dots. They're polka dots, but they're always on the back of the leaf, never on the front, never on the stem. That's how you know it's not a scale. So we got that out of the way. This is how they reproduce themselves. It's a very complicated process. I have never done it in my own home. I don't do a lot of propagating because I have so many plants. So I don't do a lot of propagating. But they take the fern, you have to take the spores and you have to spread them in a very sterile environment is number one. I tell people, never microwave your soil. Don't use outside garden soil. Don't bake your soil. It smells. But if you want to propagate your plant from spores, you do need to either bake it or microwave it. I'm not going to tell you how because I've never done it, but you can look that up. So you do have to have a very sterile environment. You have to be sterile. Your pots have to be sterile that you use, and you spread them on this moist soil. So they have to have water to, and that's why ferns are usually near water or in a very humid area or a place that rains a lot, because they have to have water to reproduce. They make these little tiny, they first start out and they're called gametophytes. That's what becomes what the first comes from these spores.
Like a baby fern.
Yeah. Well, it isn't, but it's shaped like a weird, it's kind of like almost like a flat green thing.
Okay.
And it kind of almost looks like a lichen or something, mm-hmm, but it's not. And then that has to have water. And then that's what makes the sperm and the egg. And that has to have water for that to swim over there.
Okay.
Then it starts like maybe 5 months to a year later, then you'll have that plant that looks like a fern, but it starts out not looking like a fern. So, and everything has to be very sterile. You have to have it covered. It has to be very moist. And you have to have some patience.
So when our ferns grow, like when my Boston fern, like it would get bushier and bushier, is that the spores are falling off the bottoms of the leaves onto the soil and then generating and making new ferns?
No, because okay. I personally, and I've never looked this up, but I've never had spores on my Boston fern.
Okay, because I don't think I had spores on mine either.
No, they spread like by rhizomes. And some of those rhizomes, those footed ones, those are ones that have long rhizomes and spread out. Then there's ones that their rhizomes are smaller and they become more clumpy ferns, like the Boston fern. And then they send out those little stolons. Have you ever seen those strings hanging down? So I've started some of those and then they will start growing ferns on them. I had them hanging off mom's fern and there was like 4 or 5 of those little baby that were already 3 or 4 inches high hanging off those stolons. Those look like kind of like hair or strings hanging off your fern. And then you can just either, what I did is I took a pot of soil, I set it next to the mom fern and I pinned those little baby still attached to the mom by those stolons until they started growing, and then I cut it off. And now it's its own fern. So it just depends. There's different ways. And you can also, like a Boston fern, you can divide it. You know, it has multiple, what do you want to say? Multiple plants in one pot. That's how it grows. So then you can divide it.
Okay. But back to the essence of what spores are. So spores are the dots that are on the bottom of the plants, and they're what grows new ferns. But
correct,
as plant parents, we don't have to worry about them that much. Just don't scrape them off.
Right. And what you're really seeing is the spores are really microscopic. So those little dots are called spori, and they're the clusters. They're what grow the spores inside of them. So that's kind of like a little house full of a million little spores.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And then the thought is that those spores are what grow new, but that's not what's happening. Our new growth of our ferns, like if you cut a fern back and then more grow, that's coming from the root system. What's going under the soil?
Right. So really, actually, those are really sporangias. And then clusters of sporangias, like if you have a whole leaf full of them, those are the spori, or sori. So it's, you know, there's different names, but all those little tiny, they're just like little houses. And each one of those little dots has probably, I don't even know how many spores inside.
That's so cool. I read online that like if your fern produces spores, it's actually a sign that it's really happy. So to like just take it as like, you know, a little pat on the shoulder.
Yes. Yes. That's a good way to look at it. I like that. And a lot of times when you're potting them up, a lot of people just start them like in peat moss, like solid peat moss or something, maybe with a little bit of vermiculite and perlite. But it's all about, too, what I've read is all about being very sterile. It has to be sterile to get that to work, which then you think, well, outside it surely isn't sterile. you know, that's nature doing its thing.
Right.
Inside, we have to do it differently.
It's funny you bring that up because I feel like things that happen in nature naturally that like we try and replicate inside that are so hard. Like you talk about spore generation. There's that hysterical meme that's like trying to keep a maidenhair fern alive indoors. Like I spritz you every day. I have the humidifier. I'm watering you every day and you still hate me and you still die. And then like the other side of the meme is like a maidenhair fern growing out of like a crack in a rock, like eating nothing and thriving.
I mean, I really do think it's humidity, but it's also, you just can't let them dry out.
Yeah.
And I've done it. And it doesn't, it's like a minute. I swear. It's, if it's dry for a minute and it wilts, you're like, I mean, it'll come back. Yes. Another one bites the dust. Like, I keep trying. I brought one home the other day and it's been, a while ago and it's out in my sunroom and I do not let it dry out and it's really humid out there and it's knock on wood. It's thriving.
So I'd love to hear your favorite ferns that you would recommend in general. And then I'd love to ask you a couple of different plant parent personalities and what fern you might pair with them.
Okay.
So what ferns do you think make great houseplants?
So the fern that I wrote about that I have, and I said it's, and I actually named the blog Fern for the Fern Challenged, is the Austral Gem Fern. It literally looks like plastic. I mean, of course it looks like a fern, but it's just like so shiny and kind of rubbery. And I have dried that out. It is down and drooping and it comes right back.
Okay.
Now, it may have some brown fronds on it or some ends because there's, I tell people, there's always consequences to everything, something that you do wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you've let a plant dry out. There's always going to be consequences. That's what I say. So it does give you a little bit of brown fronds, but it comes right back and it's crazy. It doesn't need watered as much as the other plants because it really just feels like rubber.
You bring up a good question. What do you recommend with brown fronds? Like just chop them off and trust that more will come in?
Because I've gotten them on the ends of my bird nest ferns and stuff too. And I always just trim them. I don't just trim them, cut them off straight. I try to trim my leaves whenever they have a problem. I try to trim them the shape that they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of do that rounded edge. But yeah, just cut them off.
That's cool. Fine.
I mean, or leave them on. It's up to you.
I mean, I would like almost kill my Boston fern and it would be like 75% brown. And then I would just cut off all the brown parts and then like all this new green growth would grow in. That's where I'm like, I don't know if they're that. I mean, yeah, they're hard to keep perfect looking, but they're actually rather hardy, or at least some are. I'm not talking about maidenhair ferns, but.
You know, a lot of people have Boston ferns because they buy them outside for their porch or their, and they get so full and gorgeous and it's so hard to throw them out. So they bring them in. And I tell them, when you bring a plant in from outside and it's coming from however many thousands of foot candles to your maybe 100, 200 foot candles in your house. So I just say that because I don't measure them, but I'm just saying that's what it is outside. And you bring them in, a plant is only going to keep the leaves that it can sustain with the light that it is receiving. Mm-hmm. Whatever light it's getting, that's all the food it has to feed itself. So if it can't feed itself, what's it going to do? It's going to drop those leaves that it cannot support. So it seems like when you bring in a big old fabulous Boston fern and it has 20 million leaflets and then 1,999 million of them end up on the floor, you're like, I get it. But it's just, you need to acclimate it. But you also have to realize that I like to start with them inside and leave them inside. Mom's fern's never been outside. So it's used to my situation. It's used to where it's at. It doesn't move and it loves it. You find the place the plant loves, I leave it there. I don't take it outside and bring it back in.
If you watch Will and Grace, but they have the most epic Boston fern in their apartment. And every time I watch the show, I'm like, that fern must be fake because that Boston fern looks so perfect.
Oh. You can tell when there is a brown leaf. So then you know, because someone will say, is that a fake leaf? And then I'll walk up to him like, well, they make them so realistic now, but it doesn't have any brown leaves or brown edges, so it can't be real.
Yeah, so funny.
It's too real. But it could be, you know, and they could just switch it out every time. Go buy a new Boston fern and put it on the set.
Totally. So you mentioned the Australian gem fern. That's one that
it's just called Austral.
Oh, Austral.
A-U-S-T-R-A-L. Austral gem fern. I had the botanical name. It is an Asplenium.
Let's put a list in the show notes, but the Austral gem fern sounds like a great fern option for like more of a low maintenance plant parent.
Yes.
And for the mindful plant parent that wants to, you know, water every day, give it a lot of TLC, obviously maidenhair comes.
Yes, that rotten maidenhair fern. A button fern.
Oh, those button ferns are so cute.
That's the one that's Pellaea. I don't know how to say it. I'm not very good with these Latin names. P-E-L-L-A-E-A, Rotundifolia. That's the one. But there's also the lemon button fern, which kind of looks like it, but it is actually a nephrolepis. It's actually in the Boston fern family. So there's
a little hardier.
There's lemon button fern and there's button fern. And I found those, both the button fern and that one. You better not let them dry out. Okay. I have killed many a button fern.
Okay. So those beware of the button ferns. So those would be perfect for a mindful plant parent that wants to look at them every day.
Yes, every day. You know what I do with my plants that need water every day? They're right by my sink, underneath the counters, under lights, which my husband hates it. I have lights underneath my cupboards.
So smart.
Aquarium lights. And those are the ones that I'm right there watering a sink. And so even if they faint or they're a little bit dry, I'm always at the sink, right?
Right.
They're at least 10 times a day. You're not going to miss it.
That's so smart. What about for our curious collector plant parents, people that like to collect like more unique? Everybody talks about the Boston fern, the bird's nest fern, staghorn fern. What's like a kind of more unique fern that maybe not everybody has? Like something that comes to mind for me is that like bear's paw, rabbit's foot, whatever those wacky ferns are.
I have all of those. I love those. I just got some. I was at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show and Andy's Orchids was there and I brought home ferns in my bag. I'm like, I have to have these. And they were weird ferns I'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. So you can find them out there, but they're in an aquarium upstairs. I'm not letting anything happen to those. But you know what is out right now? And it's out in and I saw it 2 years ago at the Tropical Plant Show. It's called the Nicholas Diamond Fern.
Okay.
It's a cross between a phlebotium and a pyrosia. It is so gorgeous. It has roughly leaves. It's just, that's a really great fern to look for. And my daughter saw one at Lowe's the other day. So they're out in, you know, it's not something you
mass market
able to find. I got one at an independent garden center, which I suggest everyone go to first, but she did see it. It's out there, but it's a really cool, unique new fern. I mean, it stopped me in my tracks 2 years ago at the Tropical Plant Show. And they're like, wow, you're good. I'm like, what is that? And they would not sell it to me. Like, I really need that. So that's a new, cool new fern. But you know what also is, you know how they have the fern allies, you know, plants that really aren't ferns, but they're kind of like a fern because they reproduce by spores, is the lycopodiums, which I think now are called, they have another name that starts with an H. But anyway, you'll still find it under lycopodium. Is so cool. And that is my plant that I tell my husband, if I'm gone and something happens to that plant, you're in big trouble because it's hard to find. I've grown it from a single little stalk and now it's cascades. It's beautiful. I'm like, don't ever let anything happen to that. But even though it's not a fern, it's kind of a fern ally. And that's a really cool, another whole group of plants to get into. Yeah. Like you say, the big bear's paws ferns are really cool. I like all those footed ferns.
Yeah, I like that you call them footed ferns. You know, I didn't even realize they were ferns because they almost look like they have a little stalk with then this big leaf that looks like a paw. I mean, I've seen them in Trader Joe's now, like in Whole Foods, and they're pretty well circulated as well, but they're gorgeous. Some of them almost have like a blue undertone to their leaves.
Yeah, the blue star one, that's really pretty.
It's gorgeous.
Also called like a bear paws too.
So are those more hardy or those need the super, super humidity too?
Oh no, mine do well. Some of them have thinner and more delicate leaves, kind of like the rabbit's foot. But some of them, like that big bear's paw fern I have, I mean, the bear's paw or the rhizome, they're really rhizomes above, these are modified stems that the fronds come out of. Mine is probably an inch and a half to two, probably about an inch and a half around. It's huge and it's fuzzy. So that's why it's called bear's paw. And the leaves that come out of there are pretty leathery. So it's pretty forgiving.
I remember.
They're not as bad.
When I was in DC with cats, I bought, I think it was a bear's paw fern at Trader Joe's, and I brought it home and it like did great. And I wasn't super high maintenance about it. And then I've gifted it to a friend who travels a lot and it's still thriving too. Like she hasn't killed it either. So I think that's a really interesting suggestion. And also for like a design based plant parent, which is someone who picks plants for like their aesthetic. I think those are just gorgeous, wild looking plants. Like the structure of their leaves are so unique and cool in the color.
If you're ever at Longwood Gardens, if you walk down their fern, I guess it's like a hallway, but it's, you know, still part of a greenhouse. They have ones hanging from the ceiling that are bigger than like a big beach ball, huge. Mm-hmm. And they're just crawling with all those little feet. I have a rabbit's foot fern that has wrapped itself around the pot. And I had it sitting next to my kitchen table. And my sister-in-law turned around and literally like jumped because she thought it was a tarantula. I mean, she's like,
oh my God.
Like if she knew me, she knew it wasn't a tarantula because I hate spiders. I mean, I hate them. I just don't particularly care for them in my house. And I wouldn't have a tarantula in my house. But you know, that's what it looks like. It's just so weird. So yeah, those are definitely plants for people that like more unique, weird plants.
That's awesome. We can't have a fern episode and not talk about the staghorn fern. For people who are listening who don't know what it is, the staghorn fern you normally see, it looks like antlers. A lot of people say it's like vegan antlers and people mount them on wood a lot, but it's this wacky thing. The leaves look like antlers and then it's got this huge like weirdo dome. It almost looks like a mushroom cap kind of that you then kind of mount. So talk to me about staghorn ferns and care with them? Because that's kind of a whole different game, I feel like.
Those are two different kinds of fronds. So the green ones that look like the antlers, and I also wrote a blog post about that, about the only antlers that I would want on my wall. Because I have relatives that, you know, have those
real
antlers, right? Yes, on the wall. So I did take a picture at their house and I'm like, this is what you could have, but these are the antlers I would want on my wall. And so those are two different fronds. So the green fronds that come out, well, that, you know, they look like antlers. Those are the sterile fronds, or the ones that make the spores. Those are the fronds that can reproduce. And then those brown ones, which start out green, they're called basal fronds. And they're what attach them to, as they grow epiphytically in the jungle, into the tree. That's what collects the nutrients for them. Like if it's growing on a tree in the forest, they'll, or, you know, in the rainforest, all, like debris will fall in there behind those fronds because they're kind of like scales, you know, they overlap each other and stuff can get in between. And that's where, how they get their nutrients in, out in the wild, or whatever you want to say, out in nature. So those are two different kinds of fronds. And when they turn brown, you should not remove those. Because, you know, we all think if it's a brown, something brown, we should remove it. But those fronds, they come out green and then they turn brown and they just keep building on each other because it can become huge and massive. You do not cut those off.
So one of our Patreon listeners, Christy, says that the shields of my staghorn fern die off as soon as a new one starts growing. Is this normal for young staghorn ferns?
Yes. If she's talking about those things that are holding it on, those rounded basal ferns, yes, they're natural for them to turn brown. That's what they do.
And so... she says, yeah, they die. So you're saying leave them on.
Yes, because I don't know if they're actually dead when they're brown. I guess they probably are because then they're growing new ones. But those are what holds that fern on and what's it's collecting debris and stuff. And
she also said, a beautiful elk staghorn I have died because a family of slugs took up residence behind the shield and I couldn't get them out. I don't know if I should have pulled it off the board. What do you do when you get pests behind those? I guess she's calling it a shield or those fronds.
That's, yeah, those are shield ferns. That's another good way to say it. Basal fronds, shield fronds. That, yeah, they shield. I probably would have taken it off. Yeah. And got rid of them somehow and got rid. Because a lot of people, when they mount them, they use sphagnum moss to mount them first onto a board, which I've done. So then you just need to soak that. So I take it to the shower and take it, or I'll, if I'm in the greenhouse, I'll take it outside and use a hose and really soak that. Or sometimes take it to the laundry sink and soak it, or to the shower and soak that sphagnum moss that's holding those. They've tied it on with fish line until it gets attached, and then, you know, it's attached by itself. Those are another thing you don't let dry out. But I guess I would have taken it off, and gotten rid of them. Yeah.
Okay.
And they are also prone to scale. I mean, you can get scale,
I bet,
on a staghorn fern.
So I want to hit you with a couple more listener questions and then we'll wrap up because I can't believe we've been chatting for almost an hour. No, it's always my fault. I'm such a chatterbox.
Me too.
So bird's nest ferns are something we see at every plant shop. I feel like they're so readily available. Those are the ones that look like they have real leaves and they're in this like beautiful spiral. So we have a listener that Jamie says, what's the best way to water a bird's nest fern and how can you make it grow big?
So I think with growing big, I have one, like I said, all my bird's nest ferns right now, I have the Crispy Wave, I have Chrissy, Leslie, the regular bird's nest, and I just got one called, and I had to call Central Florida Ferns. I sent them a picture because I didn't know what it was. It didn't have any kind of tag. And it's like got jagged edges. It's something I'd never seen. It's called the Champion bird's nest fern. All of those are on my on the counter underneath those lights. And my regular bird's nest fern is getting huge. And I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do with this? So I think it's more light, you know, really good light. Got I don't let it dry out because it's right there. And it has dropped, you know, the bottom leaves are going to die as it gets older, which is fine.
Do you prune those off?
I do.
Okay.
And also I found when I, because it's, there's a lot of plants everywhere, it's on my counters. I was only watering the side that was closest to me. And it felt like, and the other side was completely dry. So I want to remind people to always water your plant all the way around. And with a bird's nest fern, you should only be watering around the outside. I have watered one consistently in the middle where that little nest is, and it rotted it. And my, all the fronds fell off and it died. So even though, you know, you're saying, well, out in the nature, it would be getting water inside that, right? But I've said that they, I don't say, but it, they naturally grow as epiphytes. So any epiphyte that's grown on a tree, air plants, you know, like the air plants, the tillandsias, ferns, they're never growing straight up. Phalaenopsis orchids, they're never growing straight up and down. I'm growing on a slant, so that water drains out.
And you're just having like still water sit in the bottom.
Right, and because we're growing plants straight up and down in a pot, that's not natural for them to be watered in the middle. And I don't know if you've ever rotted a Phalaenopsis orchid, but I have too, because you left that water sitting in the middle.
Yes.
And normally that would be on the side. And air plants the same way. They don't want to have water sitting in the middle unless it's a,
so get under those
a tank bromeliad. But anyway, that's another story.
So get under those leaves.
Get under the leaves and water all the way around and just try not to let water sit in that middle.
Ordered the sexiest watering can from Folia Collective's website when they went online in the middle of the pandemic. It has the skinniest little spout and it gets under everything. And I love it. Houseplant Journal also has a really sexy watering can. Like, I just love a real spouted watering can.
Probably can't even tell you how many watering cans I have in this house.
It's terrible. Know, me too.
I buy all those little copper ones I see. I bought one the other day with copper and it has a little, you know, the copper spray head on it. It's so cute.
So
the one I use the most has a really long spout and it's thin and it's plastic. I've had it for years. I don't know what kind it is, but it's my favorite one. And because you can get way in with the plants.
That's awesome. One of our awesome Patreon listeners, Michael, wants to know, he just got his first tree fern, which he's so excited about. And he's wondering, how can he propagate tree ferns?
I've had a tree fern. Don't let that dry out, Michael. It will be gone. They don't ever want to dry out. And actually, I've read that even their stems want to be like, you should miss those. They like, the stems don't want to dry out because they grow in like New Zealand and Australia and it's naturally humid or whatever they're going on. But I would wait for offsets, I think. I don't know another way to propagate that. Like, wait for it to make big.
Growing off.
Cut it apart. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then one more. Tips for raising a tiny Aslenium bulbiferum, hen and chicken's fern. The baby spawns on the fronds. I've tried propagating in potting mix or sphagnum moss, but they die and don't root. What am I doing wrong? I've a packet of fern spores. What's your advice for growing fern spores?
Well, we talked about the fern spores. You have to put them in sterile medium, cover them up, put them in a good light, but not full sun, and wait for those little gametophytes to start growing.
It sounds like it's going to take a really long process.
It can anywhere from 6 months to a year to get a, that's what I read, to get a fern.
Right. So that's buckle up.
Asplenium bulbiferum. I love that. It's called a mother fern. And if you've ever seen one, it looks like a kind of a frilly fern. And then little babies grow along the fronds. Mm-hmm. And eventually they'll drop off, you know, in nature and start growing. So I've had people give them to me before and I've killed them too. So I understand. I finally got one to grow and I have one right now and I should do a blog post about it. I started it in a little tiny jar because they're little tiny, these little bulbs. I don't know what they're exactly called. They're just tiny little babies and they have like a little bulb on the bottom. I put it in the jar and I closed the lid and like a terrarium. I grew it in a terrarium and now I've moved up to the, you know, those enormous pickle jars. That's how big it is right now.
Wow. So what are your tips for that?
It's to grow it in a terrarium. Enclosed little jar. Yep. Because I tried it. Especially when they're that little.
Terrariums are a great idea. I am very curious. I want to challenge myself to try maidenhair ferns. I've never had one before. I'm really interested in trying it. And I think I'm going to try it in the terrarium route. I think that's the way to do it.
Mine's doing well. But like I said, right now it's like in a great big terrarium because it's out in my greenhouse and it's humid here in Michigan, like dripping wet. So,
right.
And I haven't let it dry out. So it's doing really well.
Well, plant friends, tell us what you want to challenge yourself with and what ferns you end up getting and tag me and Lisa. Lisa's houseplant guru on Instagram, and let us know what ferns you grow after talking about this episode. Before we go, you have a new book, Lisa.
I do.
Tell us about your new book. The links for it are going to be in the show notes. I know we have so many members in our community that have bought Grow in the Dark, your book on low light houseplants. You have amazing recommendations and several ferns in there. So what's this new book? Tell us all about it.
The new book is called Houseplant Party.
Okay.
So it has a small amount, like 15 or 16 plants, but then it has a lot of projects.
Cool.
And we're doing some recycling projects. We're macrameing. We're making different kinds of plant hangers for your plants, plant shelves, air plant shadow boxes, all kinds of fun things.
Perfect for this moment of quarantine. People are home and they need some plant DIYs to do.
Yeah. And they're really geared to, they're geared to anyone. I mean, anybody can do them, but I think they could go as low as, you know, if you have a really crafty young 10, 11 year old, they could certainly do many of the projects in there, even the younger, probably.
That's so fun. Well, I can't wait to check it out and do some DIY projects from it myself in my new home because I've got a lot of new space for more DIY projects. So I can't wait to check it out. The link will be in the show notes. And where can everyone find you? You have so many amazing blogs. I'm on your email list. I read your blogs when you send emails once a week. So where can everyone find you to keep learning from you?
Anything, the Houseplant Guru. So
my
website is thehouseplantguru.com. I'm the Houseplant Guru on Facebook and Instagram. So anyway, you can find me.
Cool. Go tell Lisa hi. And I can't wait to have you back for episode number 4 that we do together in sometime in the future.
Thank you. And good luck on your new move and your new home. How fun. More places for plants.
I know. For more ferns. We're trying more again.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Joy.
Okay, plant friends, I hope this episode gave you a fresh perspective on ferns and maybe you want to try again. Maybe you want to bring that Boston fern home and try. I have found my most success with Boston ferns and with Victoria ferns, bird's nest ferns. But I'm curious, like, what ferns do you have thriving in your home? Please let me know. Please write me and let me know what other topics you want for episodes. I'm here to help you. Lisa and her many books and website and blog and newsletter will be linked in the show notes. And of course, until next time, I hope you keep growing joy.
Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.